the analysis of the notes with Lucas and Clara from El Comercio from Ecuador.
Is play truly just for children? I mean, is it? Or does it extend, you know, into the adult world? Does it shape who we are long after we've, well, outgrown the sandbox?
Right.
And when work and play seem to merge, is that a corruption of play? Or maybe, I don't know, a refinement of work?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the biggest question is play at its core an expression of freedom?
Yeah.
Today, we're doing a deep dive to try and clarify the very nature of play. We're drawing on some fascinating insights that might genuinely surprise you.
And our main guide for this exploration, our foundational source, is the work of the Dutch historian Johan Huizinga. Specifically, his really influential book, Homo Ludens. It came out between 1872 and 1945 during his lifetime.
Homo Ludens, okay.
And Huizinga put forward this, well, pretty radical idea. His central premise was that play isn't just part of human activity. It's actually, get this, older than culture itself.
Older than culture. Wow, that's a bold claim. It sounds quite counterintuitive, actually.
Right.
What does that really mean for how we understand ourselves?
It's an incredible insight, really. Huizinga was challenging the usual ways we think about humans, you know, as Homo sapiens, the wise ones, or Homo faber, the makers, the tool users.
Mm-hmm.
He argued we're fundamentally Homo ludens, the playful human. He saw this playful side not as trivial, but as absolutely basic to our being, just as fundamental as, say, our ability to think or to work.
Okay.
But here's the really groundbreaking bit. He said, play isn't just some byproduct of culture. No, it's the very soil from which culture grows.
Okay, right. Let's unpack that, because that's a huge idea. Huizinga is basically pushing us to see that the start, the development of pretty much all culture,
mm-hmm.
politics, religion, art, science, tech, even language.
Yeah.
It's all deeply infused with play.
Exactly. Impregnated with it, as he might say.
So everything we think of as serious as business actually has play woven right into its fabric. That really turns things on their head.
It absolutely does. And,
yeah.
You know, this leads us directly to a really profound connection Huizinga makes between play and freedom.
Freedom. Okay.
He argued that you could deny almost any abstract concept. Think about it. Law, beauty, truth, spirit, even the idea of gods. You can question them, deny them. You can even deny seriousness itself.
Right. You can say something isn't serious.
Exactly. But play. Huizinga says play cannot be denied.
Huh. That's powerful. Why? Why is play undeniable in a way those other big concepts aren't?
Well, think about it. Play by command. It just isn't play, is it? If someone forces you, orders you to play, the spirit of it just evaporates.
True. It feels like a chore then.
Precisely. Genuine play has to be an expression of freedom. And crucially, it has to be disinterested, meaning you're not doing it for some external reward or purpose. You're doing it just to do it.
For its own sake.
Yes. And because of this inherent freedom, this lack of ulterior motive, play gets recognized as a kind of spiritual treasure. It's this fundamental human thing passed down maybe through tradition,
right.
Repeatable anytime, just for the joy of it.
That link between play and freedom is really compelling. But how does this free play actually show up, especially for adults? How does it look in our lives, maybe, you know, for you listening right now?
Yeah, that's where it gets interesting for grownups. When we look at adult play, a really key characteristic seems to be permission.
Permission.
Yeah. It's like many adults, even though they might crave freedom with their time or just, you know, being themselves, they sometimes get caught making these little furtive gestures, trying to hide that they were playing.
Like feeling a bit guilty about it.
Exactly. Some even feel a bit of remorse, like they should have been doing something productive. But for most people, eventually that feeling of permission, of allowing yourself to play, wins out. And that permission actually enhances the joy.
That makes sense. Granting yourself the space.
Yeah.
Okay. And speaking of adult play, sports come to mind immediately. There's this idea about the origins of sports being linked to a truce, right?
Mm-hmm. That's one line of thought. There's a theory by Michel Bouet suggesting sport serves an agonistic function. Basically, it acts as a kind of substitute for war, a controlled outlet for our competitive, maybe even aggressive drives.
A substitute for war? Like a permitted violence?
That's the sociological question it raises, definitely. Is sport a kind of permitted violence? And does it really stop actual war? It's complex because you see kids imitating war games.
Right.
And let's be honest, several modern sports are pretty clearly violent, aren't they?
Yeah, you don't have to look far. And historically, There's that example, Pelota Bretona.
Oh, yeah. Fascinating one. An ancestor of football.
Where whole villages would compete, putting in a massive effort just to get a ball onto the other village's turf. And sometimes people actually got hurt, or worse, even when there wasn't a war on.
It really shows how deep that competitive, almost tribal instinct runs, even within something we frame as a game.
Absolutely. So maybe sport is a substitute, but it still carries that echo of conflict.
It seems to. But shifting focus a bit.
Mm-hmm.
For the adult player inside the game, it's often not just about, you know, happiness or even just winning or losing. It's deeper.
How so?
In each move, each moment of the game, the adult can discover something new about themselves. Maybe it feels like fate, you know, the hand of destiny. Or maybe it's just this deep satisfaction of self-realization, of mastering something.
Oh, okay.
Through what you might call the magic of play, we actually become more human. It's really about that internal journey, the experience itself, maybe more than the final score.
That internal journey, that's vital. So if adult play is about permission, self-discovery, what about adolescence? That really intense time of figuring out who you are. How does play show up for teenagers?
Oh, it's fascinating with teenagers. The whole adolescent stage, you could almost see it as one great game.
Hmm.
But the main ways they play seem to be through, well, mockery and defiance.
Mockery and defiance. Not just like board games or video games.
Those two, maybe. But the underlying drive is different. Those childish games, they don't hold the same appeal anymore. They're searching for identity, trying to strengthen their inner life.
So it's like they're playing with their perception of the world and themselves. They might engage in self-mockery, you know, ridiculous games.
Like, yeah.
Almost blaming the world for how confusing everything feels.
Exactly. Or just reveling in the absurdity of it all. And then there's the defiance part. They often push against adults, challenge adult sanity, challenge the rules. They even challenge themselves, sometimes before they really know who they are.
Right, the risk-taking.
Yeah, things like stupid bets, unnecessary risks, a taste for danger. It seems to function as this big emotional release valve.
Mm.
The law of the game, even a self-imposed risky one, becomes a way to kind of externalize all that internal turmoil.
Huh. Processing the chaos through play.
In a way, yeah. It's their way of navigating a really complex, uncertain time. Intensely.
It's really clear how play changes with age. So adults need permission. Teens use defiance. What about right at the start? Childhood.
Yeah.
Jean Chateau said, childhood is for playing. It's almost a cliche.
It is.
But you're saying the common view that play is just for kids, that adult-centric idea, it's actually mistaken.
That's right. It misses the bigger picture. Play isn't exclusively childish. The truth is, play is found in all stages of human life, not just infancy.
So what makes child's play distinct, then, if it's not the only kind?
The key characteristic of children's play is its symbolic nature.
Symbolic play.
Yeah. Unlike the adult needing permission or the teen's mockery and defiance, a child uses play to make one thing stand for something else. You know, the classic broomstick becomes a horse.
Or the cardboard box is a spaceship.
Exactly. They're creating worlds, testing reality, using symbols in this incredibly imaginative, safe space.
And even that early symbolic play, it seems like it's setting the stage for later life. Things like guardianship and freedom, discussion and availability, stimulus and security, these are being learned.
They're the foundations, absolutely.
Yeah.
Connecting their playful world to the adult world they're entering. It's crucial groundwork.
Okay, so pulling all these threads together, there's a really interesting paradox you mentioned earlier, a key idea about play. It's actually something serious.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's central to understanding it properly.
Something serious. That feels like a twist, right? After talking about freedom and joy, it suggests play isn't simple or neat. It kind of lives in the messy bits.
Precisely. It thrives there. It navigates these tensions, these in-between spaces. It doesn't resist them. Think about the space between, say, having strict rules and just making it up as you go along.
Right. Or
between what's kept secret and what's shared openly. Between what's forbidden and what's allowed.
Mm.
Between uncertainty and having everything codified. Even between what's real and what's fictional.
Play dances between all those.
It does. It's dynamic, constantly moving in those spaces.
So what's the bigger impact then? If play is the serious, dynamic thing.
Well, think about its role in development. From, I don't know, clever wordplay in adults, which sharpens the mind.
Uh-huh.
To how play helps children understand emotions, develop effective meaning. It's described almost as a vector toward the future.
A vector, like it points the way.
Yeah, it prophesies social relations. It's where we practice interacting, where language itself gets its start in many ways.
Wow. And there's another fascinating idea mentioned. Play as a parody of magical behavior. What's that about?
It's this idea that play lets us pretend to be powerful, both kids and adults.
Mm-hmm.
We simulate believing we're in control, like magic.
Okay.
But crucially, the act of playing through that fantasy actually helps us accept our real limitations, our smallness in the grand scheme of things. It kind of exercises the specter of deceptive magic.
So playing at being all powerful protects us from actually believing we are.
In a sense, it safeguards the psychological energy we need for actual work, for dealing with reality. It's a safe way to explore those feelings of power and then come back down to earth.
It's like psychological hygiene.
That's exactly how it's described. Play is the best hygiene for humans. Through play, we stop taking life too seriously. Precisely because play itself is a serious undertaking that requires our focus.
Right. It demands engagement.
It's this essential part of culture where we learn how to learn, and sometimes, just as importantly, where we unlearn old patterns to make space for new ways of thinking.
Okay, so let's bring this all together. We've looked at play across life, its deep roots in freedom, its role in making us human, its surprising seriousness. It really feels like there's this profound link between play and just human flourishing, doesn't it?
Absolutely. The insight suggests that from play itself, from that very act, springs the energy we need for communication, for connection fraternity, and ultimately for the kingdom of freedom.
We're truly free only when we play.
That's the argument. We find this sort of gratuitous understanding of survival. We step outside the demands of reality for a moment, immerse ourselves in our own freely chosen world.
It reminds me of that famous quote by Johann Friedrich Schiller, "Man is not perfectly human, except when he plays."
Exactly. It captures it perfectly. And play, you see, it's like an infraction, a stepping aside from the disciplines and tasks that life imposes. But, and this is key, it doesn't negate them. It actually presupposes them. It needs them as a backdrop.
So it's not an escape from reality,
yeah,
but a necessary complement to it, a different way of being within it.
Precisely. That's a crucial distinction.
Mm.
It means play doesn't oppose work. If anything, it dignifies work, giving it context and meaning beyond just getting the job done.
And it doesn't oppose rest either.
Right. Because the person who's truly playing is also, in a very real way, resting. Rejuvenating their spirit. It's this beautiful holistic synthesis.
It makes us whole.
It really does. And this need for play, this capacity for it, it's there throughout our lives. It meets different psychological needs at different stages, as we've seen. And maybe, you know, every genuine smile holds a trace of that enormous capacity for tenderness, for connection that play fosters within us.
Yeah.
Ultimately, as the source material powerfully declares, todos somos jugadores.
We are all players.
We are all players.
So the final thought for you listening. If play is this essential, this fundamental to our humanity, to culture, even to our future, what new dimensions of yourself, what undiscovered parts might you find if you consciously, deliberately embraced play a bit more seriously in your own life?
Comment, subscribe, and share. More information at www.commerce.com.